it's an important time for Americans to understand that Trump, and on behalf of his voters, the way he thinks they stand, on behalf of his voters, is making these statements about universities, about public television, to be sure.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we catch up with filmmaker Michael Kirk. We're more than halfway through the first year of President Trump's second term, and like during his first stint in Washington, Trump is working to bend the government to his will. What's different this time is that years of effort to remake the courts and the Republican Party are paying off, as longtime safeguards on executive power fall away.
President Trump ran on very specific campaign promises. He's going to reform our government to make our governments work for real Americans instead of the other way around.
A new Frontline documentary offers a deep dive on this pivotal moment in American history. Trump's Power and the Rule of Law is out now, and joining us to talk about it is filmmaker Michael Kirk. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be here.
You know, this movie starts with Trump leaving office in 2021 in shame. It was really a low point. So with some perspective now and some years, how did he survive all of this to get back to power? It's really astounding.
He, people around him who flocked to him, Steve Bannon, Mike Davis, who were in the film, coming and, you know, supporting him. They really said that the description of him is amazing, that he was sort of like a dead political figure. You know, he was just this guy walking around who felt that he'd been, you know, shamed by losing the election, believed that it had been stolen from him, was kind of heartsick. And then on top of all of that, he gets, Mar-a-Lago gets raided by the feds, who find classified documents. He's got indictments, he's got court cases, he's found guilty. He loses every time he turns around. He spends a lot of the next 2 years being what he considered to be persecuted by what he called lawfare. But in that process, people who've been waiting for somebody just like Trump, people who hadn't managed to get inside his administration the first time, where he was surrounded by what they called the grown-ups in the room, basically patting him on the head and saying, no, don't worry about it. We'll take care of this. People like, the various generals and others, General Kelly, General Mattis. In this case, for 4 years, he's nursing his wounds. He's being talked to. He's being schooled. He's going out and doing events. He's starting to find his base again. Much to his, I think, surprise, there's a great enthusiasm for him still out there. And a lot of people very loyal, promising loyalty, that's very important to Donald Trump, are inside of his inner circle, talking it through, figuring out what to do, and preparing for what would happen if he actually won. And when he did, that was when what Steve Bannon calls rolling thunder began, and they could go out and create the chaos and test the legal things that he wanted to test so that he could expand his power.
I'm glad you mentioned Bannon. He's a very interesting figure because, like many people in Trump's orbit, he's been in, he's been out, and he expresses something very important in your film, which is that this is really a difference of viewpoints about what America's founding documents actually say and mean. Trump thinks, you know, what he does is the law, and the safeguards have been traditionally in opposition to that view, which was also expressed by President Nixon. So it seems like, from watching the movie, that the first time around, he really learned some things about how he should approach the job if he got it back and who he would want around him to carry it out.
Exactly. And the first thing, if you'll recall back in the days when Jim Comey was about to be fired as the head of the FBI investigation into him, he's and the investigation into Trump by Russia about Russian collusion. The first three questions he keeps asking Comey when they have a private dinner is loyalty. Will you be loyal to me? Can you be loyal to me? That's sort of the way Trump operated in New York with lawyers and even judges and others. He'd been taught to do that by a figure named Roy Cohn. He, Trump, loyalty is number one. And that was the thing he wanted the most from people who would, and knew he had when he won re-election. He had around him Bannon, Mike Davis, and Russ Vought, and many others who would be loyal to him and had a plan. And that was very important to Trump as well.
So many people over the years with Trump have said that the American system is too strong to be bent in the ways that your film looks at. So I want to ask you about how you see the courts factoring in here, because I think many people had sort of hung their hat on John Roberts as an institutionalist and the Supreme Court offering a check. Is that happening?
It's the way our system of government is designed, it's kind of unique in the world. The American democracy is what it's called, and that is that there are these counterweights to presidential power, executive power, so you don't have a king or an authoritarian figure. So those checks have kind of worked more or less, and more energy given to one or the other every once in a while. But in this particular go-around, Trump is and his people are testing the power that the president could have, trying to break through the constraints that Congress and the courts have imposed on presidents going all the way back to Richard Nixon. And he's as he pushes against those boundaries, his challenge is to overcome the Congress. And he has, because in fact they work for him, in this world. They're all Republicans. They are Republicans. They have a majority. They are supporters of his, and they're not going to be a problem for Trump and his expansion of executive power. So the only thing that could really get in the way would be the Supreme Court. And let's think about the court, the makeup of the court. First, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, a conservative, a very thoughtful man, very careful man, but a man who authored a decision in one almost about exactly a year ago, right now, that's in the case Trump versus the United States, that essentially said if you're president of the United States, you cannot commit a crime. Well, that gave Trump a kind of immunity for whatever he had done in the past as president around January 6th, and the way Trump read it, going forward if he would win, and then he won, and it became rocket fuel for what he's doing now. So the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the inevitable residence where all the chickens are going to come home to roost as Trump pushes the boundaries on immigration, on hiring and firing of members of the agencies, of closing down agencies funded and mandated by Congress, but supposedly run by the President of the United States. He's changing the entire landscape, knowing that it's going to go into courtrooms around America, that judges appointed by him and judges appointed by Obama and others are going to find, as they've done, against Trump for a lot of these actions. But Trump knows, and Trump's people know, this is going to make its way to the court, and the court is run by John Roberts, who we've just talked about, and a majority of conservative Republicans, three of whom were nominated by Trump. So he feels he may have an easy go there. But of course, some people, especially former conservative judges and justices who we talked to in the film, say, wait a minute, Trump's not going to have necessarily an easy go of the Supreme Court. In the end, they'll stand up for the law. They have to, otherwise the whole system breaks down. And even if John Roberts is conservative, he's going to have to stand up for rule of law. And that will be, I think, inevitably, probably in the immigration cases, somewhere there's a case that could bring it all forward. And the Supreme Court would have to make a decision to either support something Trump has done, whatever it is, moving people by dark of night out of the country and off to prisons in other places, or just completely deporting people without rule of law being applied. That is, they have no standing in a court. They're not taken to a court before they get taken away in the middle of the night. Trump doesn't think he has to do that. If the day comes when the court says, yes, you do, and Trump decides not to do it, then we have a definite constitutional crisis. And that's why we made this film, and that's getting ourselves to that moment, that cliff, that abyss where the Supreme Court stands on one side and Donald Trump stands on the other, is the thing almost everybody, no matter what your political persuasion, is concerned about in terms of what's in our future.
And Michael, while I have you, I want to ask you about this because Frontline and PBS films and news coverage and so on. I mean, this movie that you've made, it deals with very high stakes issues facing the country. It is anything but a biased project. I mean, you interview dozens and dozens of people from Trump's inner circle, from journalists, objective journalists, from the left and the right. It's a portrait of what's happening in the country right now. And I just wonder, as we're speaking, there's a rescission package making its way through Congress to strip funding from public media. What do you think will be lost if stations and these networks are suddenly without, funding they've been counting on from the CPB, which is one area where, as we've been talking about, Trump has really tried to put his thumb on the scale?
Well, fortunately, I make films. I don't. They happen to air on public broadcasting, but I don't. I try never to get involved in politics. It's not my job,
See, you're
really.
kind of proving my point.
But there's, this debate about funding public television has been going on for years, and at this time, people who watch what's going on in Washington, like Peter Baker from the New York Times, the senior correspondent there, said to us, "Listen, Trump is doing more than just testing in immigration, and can he fire USAID people and those things, and he's also expanding the president's reach into cultural institutions and academic institutions, public television for sure, but also the Kennedy Center, the Smithsonian, on and on and on. So it's an important time for Americans to understand that Trump and on behalf of his voters, the way he thinks they stand, on behalf of his voters is making these statements about universities, about public television, to be sure. Many Republican presidents have, about the Kennedy Center, about Smithsonian, about institutions like that. It's a kind of cultural war that's going on as well, and that's. You know, that's a that's as Steve Bannon would say if he were here, this is a democracy, baby. That's what it is. And if the President of the United States, elected by more than 70 million Americans, wants to do it, well, that's what it is. And then and who am I to argue with that? I mean, they say there is no democratic crisis in a democracy crisis in America, that Trump is acting on behalf of his voters. And that's what he should do. And the constitutional crisis in the country is being caused by people like the Supreme Court if they decide to go the other way on any of the things Trump wants to do. So there you have it. That's the heart of the argument, whether it's about public television, the Smithsonian, or the Congress of the United States, or all the people being swept up in ICE raids. It's all part of the same change in the society that that this particular president and the people around him really believe they have a mandate to do, and it'll be up to the American people ultimately to make a decision about whether that's true in all kinds of different ways, and we'll see as we look into the future.
Well, I'm always very grateful for your time and your work. We've been speaking with filmmaker Michael Kirk, and you can see the new Frontline documentary, Trump's Power and the Rule of Law, on local stations now as well as online. Michael, always great to catch up with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ian. Good to see you again.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WIMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.